Hello. Welcome to Environmental Worldviews, Ethics, and Sustainability. We're going to be talking about environmental and ethical issues today. And I'd like to start with a question. When we think about ethics and the environment, we have to take a look at the way that human beings view themselves. Now, how do you view yourself? How do you view your status and your behavior with respect to the environment and its non-human contents? It's a question, right? Well, it's not very easy to answer, even though it might seem to be, because we have to look at issues of, like, who decides, and do humans even have a right to be human-centered? And basically, how should humans make decisions that can either harm or help the environment and its non-human contents? Behind that and underneath that is a kind of issue of which humans should be given the power to decide and where and how are environmental ethics connected to values and justice. These are not easy issues, and we're going to talk about them as we go through a few slides. And we're going to basically ask you to think and ask questions, consider things in your own life and in your own perception of reality. So as we approach this chapter, you might find that your core beliefs are being challenged in an uncomfortable way. Don't worry. This means that you're thinking, and it also means that you care. So let's start by taking a look at environmental worldviews. First, there is the human-centered view. This is commonly referred to as anthropocentric. So if you hear someone in line at your neighborhood convenience store commenting that we'll be in trouble one day because of our anthropocentric worldview, you'll know that they are talking about the fact that we are in trouble because we have a human-centered worldview, and it's pretty much a formula for disaster. In contrast, we're better with a life-centered worldview. Technically speaking, that would be a biocentric worldview. So, what's so great about a life-centered view? Why does a human-centered view cause problems? It's not simply a matter of how we need to be nice. It's about survival. Unfortunately, there are many examples of how human-centered or anthropocentric worldviews result in a ravaged, decimated environment and a mass extinction event. Think about that. Pretty intense. But it's also, let's think about the terms that we've just learned. Pretty powerful, isn't it, to be able to speak with appropriate vocabulary. So, once we feel comfortable with that, we can move to talking about environmental ethics in general. What's your environmental worldview? There are basically two human-centered worldviews. The first one is referred to as the planetary management worldview. It has three attributes. First is the no problem, we can solve anything if we just have enough economic growth, better management, and better technology. How does that approach strike you? To be honest, it sounds pretty good. But as we'll find later, sometimes there are a few flaws. Next is the free market school. This approach adheres to the notion that free markets, with the hands-off or laissez-faire management and everyone working with their own self-interest in mind, will lead to a beautifully balanced earth where everyone is happy. People who are in favor of this approach believe that we should let private interests own everything. Free markets will solve all problems, they say. Finally, there is the Spaceship Earth School. People who like that viewpoint like to think of human beings and other species as being passengers on a big spaceship called Earth. It is a complex machine that we have to manage and keep in balance. Otherwise, it will crash. And then, again, finally, we have the stewardship worldview. It's another human-centric view. It assumes that we have an ethical responsibility to be caring and responsible managers, or stewards, of the planet's resources. Nothing wrong with that, right? Well, not so fast. Let's think about it. There are a few snags. Who decides what responsible means? And who gets to decide? And if we are supposed to leave the Earth in the same condition as we found it, who actually does that work? All of us? Some of us? Where? How? When? And what do we really know about maintaining the Earth's condition? We might think we're restoring or even improving on the Earth when what we're really doing is making something out of balance. Let's take a look at major environmental worldviews. You might be surprised at how many different visions and worldviews there are. Probably the most intense debate focuses on trying to decide which is more important, human wants and needs, or the overall health of the ecosystem and the biosphere. As you might imagine, throughout history, human needs and wants have been placed ahead of the overall health of ecosystems. What has resulted has been pretty painful. Human beings have learned that if you ignore the health of ecosystems, you pretty much check yourself out of the equation. Human beings are pretty vulnerable, after all. They are no match for the survivor species, basically sharks and cockroaches. So, if human beings expect to survive, they have to put their wants and needs in perspective. The overall ecosystem and the biosphere must come first. You might think it's easy to create a sustainable biosphere. After all, it's not too difficult to maintain an aquarium, right? After all, you have to do is feed the fish, change the water once a week, and make sure there's always the right mix of fish and snails, and that the fish have lots of grass and little glass pirate chests and sunken ships to swim around in, right? Well, perhaps that was somewhere in the back of the mind of the scientists who created Biosphere 2 in 1991. It was built near Tucson, Arizona, and it was intended to be a miniature Earth. They tried to make an operating biosphere that intended to mimic the Earth's natural chemical recycling systems. Did it work? Not really. There were some successes and some problems. The bottom line is that humans have a hard time creating a perfect world. You can go online and research Biosphere 2 to find out what happened. Can we manage the Earth? The critics of human-centered worldviews certainly think we cannot. Humans failed, they say. And again, to prove their point, they talk about the failure of Biosphere 2. The people who reject the human-centered worldviews look at life-centered and earth-centered environmental worldviews. At this point, you may be asking yourself, aren't all worldviews life-centered? Well, let's back up a moment and take a close look. First, the life-centered views hold on to the idea that all forms of life have inherent or intrinsic value. That means that all forms of life have value in and of themselves. For example, each species is a storehouse of genetic information. Second, each species has what is commonly known as instrumental value. What that means is that each species is potentially valuable because it has potential economic value. Thus, it can be instrumental in the survival of other species. The Earth-centered worldview holds that the Earth is a single community whose members are bound together through a web of life, a complex and adaptable network of interdependent relationships. People with Earth-centered worldviews believe that humans are not in charge of the world and that human economies are subsystems of the Earth's life support systems. The worldview you hold tells a lot about the way you will view individual species and how they interact with each other in an ecosystem. It's all about respect and a fundamental belief in the right to exist. How does it work? Let's think it through. First, If we respect all forms of life, we acknowledge their right to exist. Second, if we look at their right to exist, then we can see that each one should be able to not just survive, but thrive and continue. What we're talking about is sustainability, mutual sustainability within the species, and sustainability of the ecosystem as a whole. You may have a few questions at this point. After all, it's one thing to talk about worldview, respect for life and ecosystem and sustainability, and it's another thing to actually do it. What's the first step? How do I get started? First, we have to learn about the environment. The second step is to learn about the causes and effects of actions. This requires us to become environmentally literate. It's hard to ignore the fact that, as a species, we're pretty destructive. We are in the process of doing things that actually degrade our environment and make it difficult for other species to survive. We forget that natural capital matters. Sure, we do a good thing as a species, but thanks to technology and our immense population, we are creating real threats to our natural capital. So what does that mean in real terms? You may be familiar with the term the tipping point. Once that point is reached, the direction is set. It is, in many ways, the point of no return. If you cross it, you cannot go back. There are two key tipping points that we must never cross. One is ecological, the other is climate. But how do we know what to do? In order to fully analyze the situation and to make decisions, we need to be environmentally literate. Here is one way to become environmentally literate. Learn how to ask key questions. According to Mitchell Tomashow, ask yourself questions: where do the things I consume come from? What do I know about the place where I live? Am I connected to the earth and other living things? And what is my purpose and responsibility as a human? That last question might be a tough one, but it's okay to try to answer it. And once we determine how to increase our environmental literacy, we could use the knowledge to live more sustainably. Here are a few key points. We can live more sustainably by using certain guidelines to convert environmental literacy and concerns into action. We can live more sustainably by living more simply and lightly on the earth, and by becoming informed and active environmental citizens. We might look at the problems of the world and decide that it is too difficult to try to live sustainably. What can one person do? There are several ways to start. First, protect biodiversity. Make sure that all species have habitats that are sustainable. Second, commit to energy efficiency and, by extension, eco-efficiency. In other words, don't waste resources. Try to use renewable energy when possible. Build renewable energy capacity. Try to prevent pollution. Emphasize efficiency. And again, avoid waste. Keep things in balance. Let's look at populations and what the populations do. Humans and other species. Let's keep a balance. That is to say, a demographic balance. Finally, we may need to make sure that our economic systems, as well as our political structures, are in agreement. I hope you've enjoyed this introduction to environmental issues, and I hope that you've profited by a kind of different perspective when we look at environmental worldviews, ethics, and sustainability. I hope that you're making connections and that you have questions. Don't be afraid to ask the tough questions. And please, when you have one question, let it lead to more. And maybe then we'll have answers. Thank you very much, and enjoy your journey.